Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So glad you're with us wherever you're joining us. If you're watching us on television here in the Santa Barbara, California area at TVSB, we welcome you. And so many of you are joining us at the podcast at Good Life Conversations and also the various other platforms, including our website, which is goodlifetelevision.org, and the YouTube channel, which you can subscribe to, and you can get notified when all the new episodes come online. There's all the long-form interviews. There's power clips where we break up those interviews, and then you can follow us on all the social media platforms, including Twitter or whatever it's called now. You can find us there as well, Good Life Television. So we're just grateful you're with us. Brought to you by Bunnin Chevrolet, our friends Leo and the crew. We're so grateful for them. We're grateful for you, and we're grateful to be able to dwell on the good stuff. We get to choose what we dwell on, and it's just amazing the difference it can make when you're changing your posture to one of gratitude and dwelling on things that are noble and excellent and praiseworthy and hopeful. We've had such an amazing group of folks that have joined us here, all walks of life, amazing stories, amazing people. So it's just been so much fun for us, so much fun to have you along for the ride, and we're grateful for you. I'm so excited about my guest today. Stephanie Bell Eagle is with me. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. I've been hearing a lot about you and reading a lot about you, we're going to talk a little bit about your life, and it's an amazing story. So I'll give a quick introduction, but first of all, there's a book, The Growth of a Girl to the Wisdom of a Woman, which we're going to be talking about. Stephanie is an author, a poet. She has spent more than 40 years in real estate. She's a Rotarian and a public servant, a volunteer. She's like volunteer on steroids kind of thing, like major volunteer, like, and she's been involved in so many community initiatives over the years, founding different things and being involved in different ways and just to making the community a better place. But let's start at the beginning. Where were you born, and tell us a little bit about kind of your upbringing?
I was born in Santa Barbara in the Cottage Hospital. Room 403, bid 2. No, that's a joke. But the interesting part is that I lived on San Leandro Lane in Montecito. I went to Howard School. Mm-hmm. My grandmother Agnes Patton Parma donated a wing, I believe, to the Cottage Hospital.
Huh.
And it's still there. Her father, James Patton, donated monies to Northwestern University in Evanston, and they still have the name of Patton Gym in his honor.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, what a family.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So when we were in Santa Barbara, Daddy had a call to the Navy, and so we went off to Avenue, Maryland, and Athens, Georgia, honey. I'll tell you, you can't live there long without that accent.
Right.
So we really followed him. Grandmother gave him the old LaSalle, and so we drove it to Avenue, Maryland.
Wow.
And when all of that was finished, we drove back. He was all trained now. We drove back to Santa Barbara in the old LaSalle with our cat. Now, this is the truth. We had Daddy's uniforms were taken care of on a mangle. It's an old-fashioned way to iron something. And his uniforms were mangled by this charming, charming lady who was, I want to say it, black as the ace of spades. This was in Athens, Georgia. And Daddy found on the Navy base a little kitten that he put in his pocket and would go downstairs to the basement to shovel the coal into the furnace. And we named that little kitten black as the ace of spades. We named her Willie because that was the name of the maid that did that work. And so Willie lived with us all the way back to Santa Barbara in the old LaSalle. It's an incredible story. Wow. In the sense of what we thought of in those days, you know.
Right.
And so actually Willie lived long after she herself probably did, because of the way things were in those days.
Yeah. Wow.
So that was kind of fun.
And you ended up at Boulder, right?
Oh my goodness, yes. I went to Westlake School for Girls when we came back. We were in Santa Barbara then. Daddy opened the Merrill Lynch, Pierce,
yeah,
and Bean. It was Smith and Bean. Bean and Smith, whatever. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith.
Right.
And Bean, whatever. Whatever. Just Merrill Lynch now. And he opened the office in Beverly Hills.
Oh, really?
So we moved to Beverly Hills on 707 North Alpine Drive. And both my parents have passed now, but on occasion I will look at the clock in the morning and in the evening, and what do you think it says?
707.
You got it. Yeah. 707. So
I'll
say,
a good number.
Hi, Dad.
Oh,
everything's okay.
I love that.
It's really weird, but that's what happens. So anyway, I did. Went to Westlake School for Girls over the hill in Holmby Hills.
Yeah.
Then it became Harvard Westlake. I was on the board of, after I graduated from Westlake, I was on the board when they decided to make it Harvard Westlake. I voted no. Didn't make any difference. It's still Harvard Westlake. And so from there, I went to University of Colorado in Boulder. Go Buffs.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're doing pretty good these days.
Yeah, they're doing all right.
Yeah.
Then the summer of my senior year, I always came home to my parents in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to All Saints Church in Beverly Hills. And there was a new curate there. His name was Ed Eagle. And we became a little involved. And we communicated through the mail back and forth when I went back to Boulder. And when I came home for Thanksgiving that year, we got engaged. So I graduated on the 7th of June. And he and I married on the 14th of June.
Wow.
All Saints Church was overcrowded. I mean, how do you pick and choose? You don't. It's, you know, you're marrying the curate, the part of the establishment, so everybody was invited. Then we did have a small reception for a few persons in my parents' home.
Wow.
Yeah. And we were married 30 years. A portion of the time we were in New York City, in Manhattan. I lived there on the 10th floor. I was pregnant with James. I went there with a 2.5-year-old, David. And I went on from there.
Wow.
When I had the baby, the rector, Terrence Finley, Dr. Terrence Finley, said, "Welcome to our little Westerner who's come, our little Westerner who's come to join his Eastern brother." So that's David and James.
Wow. So when did you start getting involved with real estate in this process?
Quite a while after that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, after we were back in California, obviously. And it's an interesting question, because I don't know why or how I started to do that. But it's a service, you know.
Yeah.
And you help other people find things.
Yeah.
I remember I had an open house at one time. And I shared the listing with a gentleman from over the hill in another company. So I said, sure, no problem. I'll hold the open house. And it was up near Mulholland, kind of in the valley. I met the owner and we chatted, and I said, okay, be sure to, you know, tell me where the key is going to be, et cetera, et cetera. I get there for the open house. The key is there, but it will not open the front door. So, people are coming. They're expecting to see the house. I went around. Aha, a doggy door. Should I? Could I? I'm allergic to dogs, but that's okay. I had my purse, which was bulky. I shoved it in front of me, went through the doggy door. Remember, there's those persons who want to rampage a house. If you can fit through it. Saying, nice doggy, nice doggy. Guess what she'd not done? She didn't unlock the bottom bolt. So the key would work, but I couldn't open the door because she hadn't unbolted the bottom.
But you made it.
People came. Oh, what a neat house. Da 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 da. So
yeah.
Got through it.
You saved the deal.
Unfortunately, in real estate, you have many such stupid stories.
But when did you start writing?
I've always written.
Always?
Yeah, I've always written. On the back of one of these books, I think it explains the fact that if you're thinking something, well, here's another beginning. When you go to bed at night, in order to get into the REM sleep, which is the real sleep that helps you, if you don't get into the REM sleep, your brain is going, figuring out stuff. Write it down. Write it down. Write down your thoughts. Write them down. And then the REM sleep can take over and your brain is not working on things because you've already saved them. They're down there, right beside your bed.
That's a great idea.
It's a great idea. It works like a charm. And then in high school, I always wrote because they had contests and things of that nature. And I just, my idea is if you have thoughts in your brain and in your body and you're troubled, write it down. Just write it down.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean you're going to do anything with it.
It's a great idea. Has faith always been you were raised obviously in the church, but has faith always been a big part of your life?
Well, I've always gone to church. I'm still involved. In fact, my former husband, Ed Eagle, and I, he's the priest, we started the Church of the Epiphany in Oak Park, California.
Right.
And that all evolved because we belong to Westlake Yacht Club.
Okay.
Westlake Yacht Club.
Yeah.
And a group of us were there, and we decided that we needed a church rather than having to go all the way to Thousand Oaks from Westlake Village.
Right.
Which was St. Patrick's, which was a great church, still is. And that's how it started out. And now, oddly enough, have you ever heard of a church that has on their grounds a vineyard? We have the Red Door Vineyard. And we grow, you should see the bottom of my feet. They're purple. But we started out with that.
Such a great thing.
And people can sign up to get certain amounts of wine.
Yeah.
But we don't sell it to the public per se, you know. And we use it for our communion wine.
That's great. I'd never heard of that actually.
No, it's
never
fun.
Heard of that. So service has always been a big part of who you are. Why is that?
It might be my parents, my mom especially. I was in Campfire Girls and growing up, and that wasn't a Girl Scout, but Campfire Girls was, I guess, below that, you know. But I always volunteered in things along the way, and I've volunteered in 3 hospitals. In the Valley, it was St. Joseph's Hospital, and in New York, it was the New York Hospital. I paid a babysitter, in fact, to go to New York Hospital.
Wow.
But yeah, and I've always enjoyed doing that. But I also enjoy my volunteer work, like in Rotary.
Yeah.
I became a Rotarian because, all right, Daddy was a Rotarian. And I thought, well, I would like to be a Rotarian. So when I moved out to our area, in Sherwood area, they weren't expecting women right. in Rotary in that era. So from over the hill meaning I think Santa Monica area, the Optimist Club wanted to come to our valley and join and start a club. So I helped them. So I was an optimist, hoping Rotary would get their act together and allow women. And as soon as they did, I became a Rotarian. Otherwise, I was called a Rotarian.
Really?
If you're married to a Rotarian, you're a Rotarian.
Oh, I see.
Woo-wee. Yeah.
So when did they...
even remember the year, but...
They just made the change.
When it happened, I was...
You're the first one?
Ready to go. You know, no, there was already somebody in it, and she was one of the presidents at that time. You know?
Oh, really?
She's still there. We're still there.
Wow. So you've loved serving just yeah. because you love to do it.
Yeah.
What do you, for you and your husband, John, you have 7 grandkids between you, 4 children, I think, total. What do you tell your grandkids in terms of, you know, what you've learned or what's important to you to pass on? Let me put it that way. What are maybe 1 or 2 things that are important to you to pass on?
Well, the book, The Growth of a Girl to the Wisdom of a Woman, is an accumulation of all of the things I wrote all out through the years. And the publication of it was the hardest thing to do, is to how do I submit these thoughts to the kids, to anyone, you
yeah,
know?
Right.
And that was the great challenge. Writing the things was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the other book, the same thing. I sat out on and that's the Contentment Found in Confinement, that you're stuck in your house, right? We have, thank you very much, an incredible property overlooking. Well, some people liken it to Lake Como, but it's Lake Sherwood mm-hmm. overlooking the mountains. And how could
beautiful.
You be upset having yeah. to stay there, you know?
Right, right.
And then I also learned how to Zoom, so why leave? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a really fascinating thing, that the contentment found in confinement.
Right.
It's kind of a perspective change, isn't it?
Yes.
Is that what you found? Is that what you're trying to impart here?
Well, it was like I'm there. I was always out on the deck and observing.
Yeah.
And in the book, if you do it page by page as it starts, you are aware of the environment and how incredible it is. And I mean, why would we leave? You know?
Yeah,
why?
Right. Contentment is such an important thing. I think about this sometimes, you know, that I think we can, especially in an age of where the social media and the way that comparisons and competition and all that, it really works against simple contentment, I
right.
think. But I think contentment is a art we don't want to lose, would you say?
Yeah. A lot of people are wandering around that are not content.
Yeah, most, I think.
And they're the ones that aggravate and rise up and do improper things.
Right.
So I think that if you can just be still in your soul,
yeah,
and just relax, let things happen that they're going to happen anyway, but don't take them to heart unless you can do something about it.
Yeah.
And then do it gently.
That's good. That's good. I love your jacket.
Thank you.
What do you like about our country?
It's America.
Yeah, that's true.
It was America.
Right.
But there's still some of us that are in the belief that it can be again.
Yeah.
And should be.
Yeah.
And with a little attention to certain matters, it will be.
Yeah.
You have to have faith that it will happen again. If you look back in history and see all the wars and how they recover, and well, look at just Hawaii.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, a lot of things have happened.
A lot of things have happened. And then things come back again. We may not be here when that happens, but it does eventually happen. So you just have to have faith that you can hang in there as long as you can and do what you can as long as you can.
Yeah.
I guess would be the best.
Right. Not being overwhelmed by the nature of our problems can be a challenge, especially today.
Indeed.
But doing something is almost like the answer. I mean, it seems like we can all do something.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
You know, that's kind of a different thing.
Yeah.
A different perspective and way of looking at it. So, how did you meet John?
Well, every summer we have what they call a picnic. Okay?
For Rotary or for...
No, oh no, oh I'm sorry, yes. You said, where did I meet John? Well, at church.
Church.
Yeah, Church of the Epiphany has a picnic once a year out in the lawns of the neighborhood. I decided it should be called the Epiphanic. And I was responsible for a lot of things at Church of the Epiphany. So, but anyway, on this particular day, John, I used to sing in the choir at the 10 o'clock, and John would come at 8 o'clock, so we never crossed. And he asked, I guess he decided to come to the church, the picnic. And that's when I met him. And he came early. I was already there because I was setting up the booth for, you know, putting in your ticket to see what you're going to get, that kind of thing. And Judy Johnson, who was at the welcoming table, said, you know, why don't you go see if Stephanie needs any help? And he did come, and he did help. And now it's time for the buffet, right? Now, I was single for 15 years, and at that church, too. So I was thinking, I can't talk to John without the whole establishment hearing every word. So I said, why don't we take our lunch and eat under that tree out there, which is what we did. Well, at that time, I was in real estate, and he had just moved to the area. And so he was looking for a property. So I helped him out there, and then he joined the choir, and we were singing in the choir. And
he was going to join the choir whether he could sing or not.
Right.
Right.
And so the Hank Mitchell was the rector. He's not the rector, he's the vicar, because we were not self-supporting. The diocese supported us at that point. Still is. So he was the vicar, ordained priest, of course. And I said to him, I'd like to get married in the 10 o'clock service, because whom would I ask to come? You know, they all know us. So he said, he agreed. And I said, you've been divorced, I've been divorced, John had been divorced. So why don't we get this all together, and you can, because I would help him at different services, and he always never mentioned divorce. And I said, you have my permission to talk about it if you wish, anything, anything goes. It's your 10 o'clock service, but we just happen to want to be married in it. And the choir found this out because our choir director said, now, Stephanie and John, you need to sit out on this one because you won't be singing it. And the choir goes, huh? Why? Then she told them that we were going to be married.
So that's what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened.
When was that? How many years ago was that?
Well, let's see. What year is this?
23.
Well, we were married in 2000, so I could remember.
Ah, there you go.
23 years.
23 years. Wow.
He was single 4, I was single 15. Wow. He had been married 32, I had been married 30.
Wow.
So if you add that together, huh, what, 108 years?
Who's counting? Do you still write? Do you still keep writing?
Yes, yes, but I haven't put anything together in sharing it with a book of sorts or whatever.
Yeah. Do you, this is the last question, and I want to get to this, some of the poetry, but how do I put this? Do you spend much time thinking about what other people think about you?
No, none.
None?
None.
I love that.
What's the point?
Yeah.
They're going to think what they want.
So here's my theory. So I'm, you know, 48.
Okay.
Right? So I love that about people that are older than me, how they kind of lose the, like, any care about what people think about them. So, like, I want to be like an older person now in that way.
Well, you're going to have to work on it. I'm 88.
88.
88.
Well, I'm going to do it now.
Okay.
Can I do it?
Sure.
Okay. Today, we're declaring this. I just don't care anymore.
Okay.
Done.
Good.
It happened. 88 years old. That's amazing.
And my birthday is May 27th.
May 27th.
So I'll be 89. One more year to go and I'm 90.
You want to go to 100?
Not particularly.
Well, you never know. You look great.
Thank you much.
Would you read a little of this for us?
Yeah.
I know that there was one in particular you were thinking about, but I'd love for our audience to be able to taste this a little bit.
All right, I'd be happy to do this. This is from The Growth of a Girl to the Wisdom of a Woman, and it's divided into different sections. This section is in the, well, it probably doesn't matter. Okay.
The back, it's in the back.
Have you seen the cross? Have you seen the cross in the moonlight, in the fountain, on the mountain? Yes, I have seen it. In the sorrow of the newly baptized young adult with no one to stand up with her. In the face of the older woman who had questions she had for years been afraid to ask. In the tired eyes of the father running after an out-of-control 4-year-old daughter. Yes, I have seen the clear beauty of the empty silhouetted cross, the symbol of hope, of newness, rising up from the depths of gathered sorrows, pains, loss, unanswered prayers, dumped at its feet, forming a reverse halo, as it were, circling its roots. As if unstrapping those knapsacks of burdens from our backs and laying them down at the foot of the empty cross adds to the power and strength of this memorial garden cross. As the plants will grow with nurturing sunlight, water, so too will this cross grow in strength, power, significance from the prayers and letting go of burdens and sorrows laid at its foot. Have you noticed the growth? Already the cross has grown some copper. Isn't it exciting and wonderful that this memorial garden cross is user-friendly, that it is outside, really well and beautifully lighted at night, available by sun, moon, fog, rain, wind, whenever the need moves one to be there. No appointment, just go. I have been there at night when neighbors are walking through our churchyard. They are deep in intimate conversation, feeling safe and secure, protected by the lighted cross. We have done something which for 16 years has been a dream, an extra. In the beginning, we did it for us, for the women of Epiphany. But I would like to suggest that we will find the ripples of this cross, fountain, and memorial garden, spreading and circling into nooks and crannies we had never foreseen. Thank you, God, for giving us the vision and fortitude to carry forth with your work. Mm. Yes, I have seen the cross in the moonlight, reflected in the fountain, and on the mountain. Amen.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. The growth of a girl to the wisdom of a woman. Stephanie Bell Eagle, everyone, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
It's really
special. Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.